I'm sorry to say we were unable to reach our guest this week, Judge James P. Gray, but he's graciously accepted our invitation to be with us next week. I hope you enjoy this show. It's a rare circumstance where I get the chance to interact with some of my listeners.
Hey, this is Tommy Chong for the Drug Truth Network telling everybody, don't let free speech go up in smoke, man.
The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
Identify this jurisdiction by its drug laws. Each year, this nation arrests 1.6 million nonviolent drug users and spends more than $50 billion on their 90-year-old endeavor. They export their laws to the world and are responsible for record cocaine and heroin harvests, children's easy access to drugs, and the deaths of thousands of innocents abroad. The world's leading jailer, the United States of America.
Welcome to this edition of Century of Lies. I am Dean Becker. We're trying to get our guest for this day, Mr. James P. Gray. He's the author of Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, a judicial indictment of the war on drugs. And if we can get him online here, we'll be talking about his book, The U.S. Situation, as you heard in that Name That Jurisdiction. We are the world's leading jailers. And the main reason behind that, of course, is the drug war. I want to ask you if you have ever had any problems with the drug war. I think it's impacted every family, every individual perhaps, in that a friend, an associate, a co-worker has been busted, his life destroyed more or less by this 90-year-old war on drugs. But you know what? This war of terror, it's nothing new. Terror strikes the soul of the citizenry every day through unnecessary violence that visits our neighborhood when the dark side of narcotics prohibition raises its ugly head, seeking profits, locations, and decreased competition. To accede that narcotics is the problem is to proclaim that the only solution ever to be found is to continue funding Osama bin Laden and the drug cartels, and in arresting 1.6 million American citizens each year for baggies of plant extracts found in their possession. Many citizens are worried about their little Johnny and their poor little Susie, but mostly they worry about their own proclivity to use. They are so afraid they might wind up an alleyway junkie that they are perfectly willing to lock up me and you and untold generations of our children to protect themselves from themselves. Most politicians and the vast majority of U.S. citizens have never looked into the origins, the science, and the morals of drug prohibition. To the great relief of the cartels, the violent gangs, and the street corner vendors, the citizens' knowledge remains narcotic-related. You know, fear could make this drug war last forever. 90 years ago, our leaders told us to circle the wagons. Barbarians are ambushing our children with drugs. Dutifully, we created a civilization cloaked in fear, awaiting the dread onslaught, the death, disease, and destruction created within this loop of security have been ignored because we've been told that to change our focus might allow our barriers to be broached. Those who thus claim to protect us by way of eternal drug prohibition are, in fact, if not with intent, party to the attack on our society, and whether through ignorance or collusion in league with the drug traffickers. The drug war is a rain dance, a primitive excuse for bigotry and government-mandated hatred of our fellow man. Without the superstition, demonization, and the public's blind acceptance of our venerable witch doctor, the drug czar's pronouncements, drug prohibition would easily be seen as the utter failure of all time. The Inquisition, the abomination of the Salem witchcraft trials, cannot hold a candle to the machinations of this modern drug war. Quote, give one of these Mexican beat workers a couple of puffs on a marijuana cigarette, and he thinks he's in the bull ring at Barcelona. That's an actual quote from the legislative proceedings just before the first marijuana law was passed in the state of Wyoming. What we've been doing in the U.S. for the last 100 years or so is vilifying certain of our brethren because we fear their competition in the workforce or with our women folk. So we prosecute them for doing drugs that we don't approve of. Fear is relative. It's based on our experience, our training, our upbringing, and just plain old propaganda. During World War II, in Germany, Jews and gypsies were considered by the Third Reich as unconditionally exterminable. This propaganda swayed the German population to support the Reich and unified the people in their hatred of Jews and other groups. They were led to believe that Jews were to blame for the war and for the German people's other suffering and grievances. Now let's think about that. Led to believe. We've also been led to believe that drug users are unconditionally exterminable. We've been taught that users are damned, literally damned. And if we can't break them from their habits, then death is the appropriate final solution to their problems. And why would we come to believe this? Why are drug users exterminable? Fear, derived from endless propaganda flowing from the supposed bastion of truth, the U.S. government, the U.S. media, and the multinational corporations that love the drug war, that make billions of dollars because of drug prohibition. Fear is relative. It's mostly about ourselves, our family, our loved ones, the future. There is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, moral clarity, medical data, or any valid reason whatsoever for the drug war to exist, let alone to continue in its destruction of millions of American lives. All right, I don't know that we're going to get the judge. Apparently, he might be on a case, can't get out at this point in time. Byron, let's go ahead and do our break at this point. When we come back, I want your calls. I want to hear from you out there. I want to see if we can't explain a couple of things, some of the machinations of this drug war.
Next up, let's hear from a real rock and roller, a truly wild child, Mr. George W. Bush.
Take a walk on the wild side. One, two, three, four. Imagine yourself country. It isn't hard to do that. Nothing to kill or die. No religion, too. Imagine all people.
Next, you'll hear the voice of a regular Drug Truth Network guest, President of the Criminal Justice Policy Foundation, Mr. Eric Sterling.
They know that every way in which you try to measure the effectiveness of the war on drugs, it's a failure. And so I asked, well, why does this continue? Why does our program, which the public itself overwhelmingly knows is a failure, continue? And I believe the answer is that it maintains white privilege more effectively than any other institution does in our society today.
Imagine your possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man.
Drug Czar of the Americas, John Walters.
To make an argument that because we already have a problem containing something that we have, for better or worse, decided to contain, we ought to uncontain all the other problems given what we see about marijuana is, I believe, not responsible.
During this time of eternal war, I find it my somber duty to report the death toll from the drug formerly known as marijuana is zero.
It's so good that when I smoke it, the government freaks out.
Yes, my friends, they say this pot is 100 times stronger than it was, you know, back when we were kids. It's an outrage, isn't it? Tens of millions of Americans have been arrested. Hundreds of millions of man years have been wasted behind prison bars by nonviolent, otherwise productive and useful citizens for the crime of having a baggie of flowers or other plant products in their possession. Drug prohibition, quite simply, is evil. It's a diabolical fraud of epic proportion. Those who stand in support of its continuance fall into one of three categories. They are truly ignorant, never having read the voluminous information on the subject, or in a closely related grouping, they are superstitious, meaning they cling to old wives' tales, grandpa's warnings, or government propaganda. The third group, the ones who benefit the most from this first war of eternity, are the drug lords themselves, the greedy, lying, weasel-faced arbiters of this failed, flailing, hopeless policy of drug prohibition. We do have, is that Howard on line one? Hello, Howard, you're on the air.
Hey, well, I was just calling. I listen pretty regularly, and I've always just been left with this question. What are we supposed to do about people that do crystal meth, things that are, like, harmful to themselves and to other people? Like, I mean, I think most all of us are for the legalization of marijuana and maybe that, but what about harmful drugs? What's your thought on that?
Well, the first thing is we have to get rid of the black market, because the black market is the world's largest multi-level marketing organization. It is the means and the mechanism that distributes these drugs so freely into our neighborhoods that you can pick up the phone and get a delivery in an hour. What we have to do is control and regulate the distribution to adults. I was a speed freak for many years, and I want to tell you this, that the biker meth is terrible stuff. We should not do it. No one should do it. The pharmaceutical grade stuff is a step better, but it's still quite harmful and can ruin your health, your financial situation, your relationships, and so forth. Go ahead, sir.
So the people that are, you don't think that we should put people in jail for selling that stuff?
Well, if it were legal, the only people selling it would be Eckerd's. The only people that would bother to make it would be certified chemists.
And who would be getting a prescription for it? Who needs to be doing crystal meth?
Well, the point is, without the black market, crystal meth would go away. They would be distributing pills and or liquid methamphetamine hydrochloride.
And you think that's okay that people are taking that?
Well, sir, I'll put it to you this way. There is a black market that puts this crap out onto the streets that people buy and use, and their health deteriorates because it's got cuts of laxative and who knows, all the way to Drano. And the health problems.
So you advocate pharmaceutical grade methamphetamine?
I do indeed.
And
The point being, sir, there are already...
That's the reason the war on drugs is ridiculous, is because of these kind of opinions. You know, people that are doing methamphetamines need to be going to jail. And there's pharmaceutical grade, street grade, it doesn't matter. I think that to not make some sort of law enforced where these people can be in trouble. I don't think that making methamphetamines, pharmaceutical grade methamphetamines, available to addicts at Eckerd's is a solution.
Well, and I understand why you would develop that opinion, but it's on the street now. It is now to the point where people perhaps commit crimes to buy these drugs.
So make companies like Pfizer rich off buying pharmaceutical-grade methamphetamine?
Up until 1964, it was made and sold by Pfizer and Merck. And it's
so
still available.
Are you advocating that, then? You're advocating Pfizer and Merck making money rather than, your average meth lab maker?
Well, who would you prefer make money off of this, criminals or legitimate companies?
I prefer no one made money off of it, but to be honest...
You're reaching for a pipe dream. People have been doing drugs for as long as there's recorded history. And it was only with the advent of the multinational corporations in the early part of the 20th century that these drugs became illegal. Prior to that, they were freely available. Heroin sold on the shelf next to aspirin at the same price. We couldn't have done this more wrong if we have tried. And it's a hopeless failure.
I definitely agree with you that the war on drugs is a hopeless failure. I think advocating that drugs that are just horrible to people's lives should be available with prescriptions,
Well, sir, I did it for years. I survived. I'm here to tell you the tale that people do not have to go to prison. Treatment should be made available for those who seek it, and that adults should be left alone.
But it should also be available to those who seek it at stores without consequences or punishment.
Well, alcohol is the biggest killer of them all, sir. other than tobacco. And meth is a problem. But again, it is the surreptitious criminal nature that leads to many of the problems that we have. I thank you for your call, Howard. We're going to move to the next one, Byron.
Love it. Thanks.
Hello, Carol. You're on the air.
Hello, Dean. I totally disagree with Howard. I used to be a heroin addict for approximately 3 years. That's been more than 30 years ago. I got off of the heroin and consequently started taking pharmaceuticals legally prescribed by my physician, and found out that I got myself into a much deeper situation much more quickly with the pharmaceuticals on my back than I did with the street grade heroin. I agree completely. It's ridiculous. We're locking people up. We're tearing families apart for minor infractions. The war on alcohol, the prohibition on alcohol, didn't succeed. When are they going to quit blowing our money and start helping the American citizens and people from the rest of the world that need help? These drug manufacturers, the pharmaceutical companies, are constantly peddling their drugs on television. And yet we're surprised when our children start taking drugs. It doesn't make any sense.
Many times they don't even tell you what it's about. Just tell you to ask your doctor. And, you know, it is an insane policy. Carol, thank you for your call.
Take care, Dean.
Yes, ma'am. All right, let's move to Amanda, I believe, is next. Hello, Amanda. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Amanda.
What drugs would you consider drugs that ruin people's lives?
Tobacco, alcohol, in that order. Tobacco kills 400,000 Americans every year. Alcohol kills about 120, not counting car accidents.
So don't you think that it would be best to teach children from a young age self-control and how to control their own desires and temptations and stuff like that?
I think that's absolutely a profound thought.
People should be able to regulate themselves.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. I cannot disagree one bit, Amanda.
That's the problem, is that we live in a culture that is all about going to the extreme and stepping it up a notch, you know? And that's pretty much how it's going to continue being.
Well, again, it is that black market, that world's largest multi-level marketing organization that pushes this through our neighborhoods. People down and out get a little drugs. They want to make a little money. They talk to their friends and associates, and it just it makes it where children have an easier access getting drugs than they do tobacco or alcohol these days. It is an upside-down situation.
Well, what was the other question I was going to ask? Oh, about marijuana and other drugs. Do those statistics include taking marijuana and driving as well?
Have you
been killed in an accident when someone's been under the influence of marijuana?
I would think that would happen more often when someone happens to knock the fire off the joint, it lands in their lap, and they run into a tree. Marijuana is not that much of a detriment to one's focus and ability. Amanda, we do have a lot of calls. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, let's move to Bill. Hello, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I wanted to just speak about just marijuana.
Okay.
I think, you know, being a baby boomer myself, and the time is now if we're going to change the laws regarding marijuana. We're all in power now. We've all been through it in the 60s and know how harmless it is. That's one point I'd like to make. And the other point is, if we are going to legalized marijuana, I'd like to see, you know, the sale of marijuana should probably still be illegal, but possession under a certain amount should definitely be legal, and maybe you should have to grow it in your own backyard, like the libertarians say. But I think legalizing marijuana would solve a lot more problems than the drug war, so-called drug war, has obviously not solved. And those are the only two points I wanted to make.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. I'll respond to that. I think the point is marijuana, again, has never killed anybody in the known history of mankind. And these laws are so insane that we declare, the drugs are, declares marijuana a bigger threat than methamphetamine. And again, it's a means to garner more money, more funding for their efforts. Bill,
well, it might be a bigger threat, but that's all the side effects from the black market. Not the effects of the drug itself on the individuals.
I don't know the truth of this, but I've heard the only death from marijuana was a gentleman who was hit by a bale of it out in the middle of a field near Austin as they dropped it out of an airplane. Bill,
what
thank
a way
you.
To go.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's move to John. Hello, John, you're on the air.
I wrote my dissertation on the drug war, and I found that, in fact, comparing the Netherlands and some cities in the United States, if you simply don't arrest people for drug crimes, you have fewer property crimes. It turns out that I think the cops focus more on real criminals and avoid people, whether it even be getting cocaine or crack, like that even in the Netherlands, they tolerate it. But I wanted to say a couple other points. Thank you for having the show. I'm listening on the internet. I'm down in Brownsville, actually.
Well, great to know that, John. Thanks.
But the one woman said about, what about driving? And the Nixon commissioned a study about the effects of marijuana and driving. And, of course, it was discovered that, heck, people drive almost as well sober as they do, on marijuana as they do sober. So they crushed that. And, of course, the Nixon commissioned study wanted to recommend decriminalization of marijuana. And Nixon told them, no, you can't say that at all. So they just advocated reducing penalties. One more thing, of course, to say, I really hear a lot of parallels with the drug war, like that one person called earlier, almost with the war in Iraq. It's like, well, we know the program's wrong, the laws are wrong, the policy's wrong as it is now, but what you advocate, going on 180 degrees, fixing the problem by taking away the law or the government's illogical force, they say, no, you can't do that. Well, then you're stuck with the same position. There's a guy who worked in the Clinton administration. His name's Edelman. He said, well, we shouldn't put people in prison for drugs. I said, well, then we need legalization. He said, no, not that. I said, well, then what else are you going to do? You're stuck. Either you maintain the status quo, you maintain the power structure it is, you maintain a racist, class-oriented system, protecting the drug companies, as you've been saying so eloquently, or we get rid of the charade, we have full legalization, you let people, like you said, bare aspirins on the shelf, heroin's on the shelf, some tincture of marijuana's on the shelf, and you let people do what they want. And as we know, people are always going to gravitate to the lowest level drug, the least addictive, the lowest amount. And that's why people drink beer instead of grain alcohol. And that's why people, don't smoke extra nicotine and tar cigarettes. So I really would like to get in contact with you, maybe if there's some email information over there, because I'm trying to write a book, follow up my dissertation, and I think we share a lot of ideas.
John, I tell you what, you can get in touch with me via email, dean@drugtruth.net. Quick point, Grandpa's medicine is not very attractive, and that's why in the state of California and the 9 other states where they have now legalized medical marijuana, children's use has actually gone down. It's not seen as rebellious. Let's go ahead and move to Pedro, please. Hello, Pedro.
Yes, Dean.
You're on the air.
Yes, I had just a couple of points. First of all, about the caller, I think his name was Howard, who talked about the methamphetamine. I think people fail to remember that there is legal methamphetamine. I mean, there's Paxil and Ritalin and all this other stuff that does affect our kids' brain developments and how they think, especially in the classroom. Also, about the marijuana, I did attend a meeting. I believe you were there about the, there was a lady from California who came in and was talking about the, what she went through when they're helping legalize marijuana. And I was wondering what the status is here in Texas or in Houston at least, on that.
Well, Pedro, the best I can give you for that is the laws are in flux. Supposedly now if you have less than a pound of marijuana and you get busted, that you're supposed to be forced to go to treatment rather than being incarcerated. Now, I don't know how that's working out. I think they avoid that whenever possible. But insofar as medical marijuana, there is no provision for that here in this state. But I did talk to our district attorney, Mr. Chuck Rosenthal, and he told me that if the people of Texas want to legalize marijuana, it's just fine with him. It doesn't hurt his feelings at all. Thank you,
yeah,
Pedro.
Right.
Thank you, Pedro. Let's go to James. Hello, James. You're on the air.
Hey, Dean. Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for the show. And again, kind of on the Howard subject and the methamphetamine, I think that people like Howard fail to see that the problem with many drugs and many things in general is not the drug itself, but the use of it, overuse of it, and the abuse of it is what is the excess of the use. Your methamphetamine isn't going to kill you if you don't do it very much. And neither is any drug. If you do it, you know, once a day in small portions, then you're not going to have the same problems you are as if you get addicted to it and you do it every day and you do it over and over again. I mean, anything can have bad health effects if you do it too much. You drink too much, you get liver disease. You smoke too much, you get lung cancer. You smoke too much weed, you're going to be sitting the TV too much, in front of the TV too much. But the problem here is excess, and the prohibition creates even more problems by all the things that you always talk about with the black market and the criminals, and anybody who does it is a criminal. And people who want to just legalize the drugs that they're in favor of legalizing don't understand the systematic problems with the drug war, and they need to realize it's not just about certain drugs are okay and certain drugs aren't. It's a whole, the whole system.
Exactly right, James. I tell you what we've done with this black market is they touched on it earlier. Rather than smuggle beer into the United States back when the alcohol importers would bring in hard liquor. And therefore, it brought a harder substance into play for our society. And as now, rather than use coca or Coca-Cola, we make cocaine the product that gets distributed. And opium is a better product than heroin, for that matter. Rob, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just want to thank you for your show, Dean. This is very informative, and I appreciate all your efforts to set people straight on the facts. You know, it's great for you to see, for you to point out this collusion that goes on between government and private industry and the drug runners themselves to keep this mechanism in place, because, like you said, you know, the pharmaceutical companies have a lot, I mean, they are marketing this to us every day and directly.
Vioxx.
So for them, for anyone to claim that, the black market of drugs needs to continue and that we need to continue to incarcerate people is such a hypocritical opinion, because, it's they're being marketed today through legal means. And, I hear all this talk these days after 9/11 about freedom, freedom, freedom. Well, what freedom do we have when we don't have the right to choose what drugs we might take? And it's up to the individual to regulate themselves.
Rob, I'm going to have to stop you right there, my friend. We are flat out of time. I want you all to join us next week on Century of Lies. I hope perhaps at that time we'll get Judge James P. Gray in here. And I thank all the callers. We didn't get to a few of you. I'm sorry for that. But it is up to you. It's up to you to make the difference, to call your legislators, the paper, the mayor, the governor, everybody, and tell them you're sick and tired of this drug war and do your part to help bring it to an end. In closing, there is no justice, no logic, no scientific fact, no religious underpinnings, no moral clarity, no reason whatsoever for this drug war to continue another second. The drug lords run both sides of this equation. We've been duped. Please become part of the solution. Dare to speak the truth. Prohibito istak ivalesko.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Duffy.